Last week, in our series in Genesis, we rejoiced with Abraham and Sarah over the birth of the son that God had promised them. We're in chapter 21. The Lord visited Sarah as he promised that he would. She conceived and she bore Abraham a son in his old age, and their son's name was Isaac. As Isaac grew and was weaned, Abraham called for a celebration because God's promises were unfolding before their very eyes. And in the midst of this celebration, Sarah saw that Hagar's son Ishmael was mocking it. Now, something important that I didn't bring out last week that I want to make sure you understand, the way it's written in the text, it indicates that this was not an isolated incident. No, the way it's written is that this was an ongoing issue, and it maybe was the straw that broke the camel's back. The way it's written, it indicates that Ishmael was always mocking. And the object of his mocking wasn't the child. What he was mocking was the promise of that child's future. The fact that everyone was excited about what God was doing, that there was this destiny that was already lined out for him. That's what he was mocking. God's faithfulness, God's promises, God's future, the sense of God's purposes in his life. So she sees it. She's on track with the Lord, and she tells Abraham that the slave woman and her child needed to be put out, as they're not to be included in the inheritance that God had promised. They're not a part of that blessing that would come. And it was exceedingly stressful for Abraham because of his feelings for Ishmael. God told him not to stress, to do as Sarah had told him to do, to put out Abraham's slave woman and her child. But then God added for Abraham, he would make a great nation out of him. And we see that Abraham rose early in the next morning, and he gave Hagar provisions, and he sent she and her son away. She left and she wandered in the wilderness of Beersheba. I want you to remember that at this time, Abraham's living in Palestine and in the city of Gerar. He's under Abimelech's invitation. So it looks like she's on her way back home to Egypt. And so that's where we pick up this morning. We're in Genesis chapter 21. We'll start in 14. Abraham rose early in the morning and he took bread and a skin of water and he gave it to Hagar, putting it on her shoulder along with the child, and sent her away. And she departed and wandered in the wilderness of Beersheba. When the water and the skin was gone, she put the child under one of the bushes, and then she went and sat down opposite him, a good way off, about the distance of a bow shot. First she said, "Let me not look on the death of the child." And as she sat opposite him, she lifted up her voice and wept. And God heard the voice of the boy, and the angel of God called to Hagar from heaven and said to her, "What troubles you, Hagar? Fear not. God has heard the voice of the boy where he is. Up, lift up the boy and hold him fast with your hand, for I will make him into a great nation." Then God opened her eyes and she saw a well of water, and she went and filled the skin with water and gave the boy a drink. And God was with the boy, and he grew up, and he lived in the wilderness and became an expert with the bow. He lived in the wilderness of Paran, and his mother took a wife for him from the land of Egypt. At that time, Abimelech and Phicol, the commander of his army, said to Abraham, "God is with you in all that you do. Now, therefore, swear to me here by God that you will not deal falsely with me or with my descendants or with my posterity, but as I have dealt kindly with you, so you will deal with me and with the land where you have sojourned." And Abraham said, "I will swear." When Abraham reproved Abimelech about a well of water that Abimelech's servants had seized, Abimelech said, "I don't know who's done this thing. You did not tell me, and I've not heard of it until today." So Abraham took sheep and oxen and gave them to Abimelech, and the two men made a covenant. Abraham set 7 ewe lambs of the flock apart, and Abimelech said to Abraham, "What's the meaning of these 7 ewe lambs that you've set apart?" And he said, "These 7 ewe lambs you'll take from my hand, that this may be a witness for me that I dug this well." Therefore that place was called Beersheba, because there both of them swore an oath. And so they made a covenant at Beersheba, and then Abimelech and Phicol, the commander of his army, rose, and they returned to the land of the Philistines. Abraham planted a tamarisk tree in Beersheba and called there on the name of the Lord, the everlasting God. And Abraham sojourned many days in the land of the Philistines. The first time that Hagar left, remember when Sarah had been dealing harshly with her and she left, she didn't wander. Where did the Lord find her? She was on the road to Shur and he found her next to a well. She knew where she was. She was on a direction. She didn't wander. But here it says she's wandering. And it indicates that she strayed from the path. She's unable to get to her destination. And we find that usually when someone's wandering, especially here in the Old Testament, the way this is used, it's either a deliberate action to be wandering or it's deliberate upon them. They've taken actions that this is now the consequence of or been careless. And so it seems to indicate that there's a hesitation of her leaving and of her going. And because of that hesitation, this reluctance, she's now wandering in this desert. And in verse 15, they come to the end of their water. But in this desert comes to the end of their strength first, this boy. That's why so many people think he's young, but he's not. He's 17 or 18, and he falls short first, and so he's struggling. And so what does she do? The word that's used is she lays him in or under a bush. Why? They're in the middle of this desert section. This is the only shade or cover that's around. And so she places him, or she throws him into this bush. And it says she moved away from him, a bow shot, about 100 yards away. Why? She didn't want to watch him die. She can't just leave him. And so she goes 100 or so yards away, and she sits herself down and waits for death to come. And then it says that she lifted up her voice and she cried. Now, we might think that she was praying here, because so oftentimes when you lift your voice to the Lord, you're praying. That's not the word. That's not the term that's used here. The term that's used in this particular instance is that she's not crying out to God. It's written carefully so that in order to convey that her cry had been lifted from her guts. This is one of those way down deep cries that just comes up, and it's just such a sorrowful, gut-wrenching cry from the depths of her heart. That's how she lifted up this cry. Do you remember in Genesis 16, the Lord comes to her. Why? Because he saw her. He saw her, and he was watching out for her, and she called the place Beer Lahai Roi. And she called God, God, because he was the God who sees me. He's the God who watches over me. And so the question arises, why would she not cry out to him, the God who's watching her, for help? Did she understand enough to know that this was the God that had agreed with her being put out, not just by Sarah, but with his approval? Might be a source of her sorrow, her bitterness. And look at verse 17. Now when he comes to her, did he come to her because he saw her? No. He came to her because he heard the voice of the boy. The angel of God called to Hagar from heaven, and he says, what's the matter, Hagar? Another one of those questions that God knows the answer to. What's the matter, Hagar? He calls to her by name. Hagar, what's causing you such trouble? He's wanting to know what's causing this cry to come from deep within her heart. Obviously, there's an immediate burden on her heart because her son's about to die from exposure. But there's a deeper burden in her heart. There's a lost inheritance. What will be of her son now that he's out of God's plan and purposes? That's the burden of her heart. How do we know that? Because of what God responds, what he tells her. The angel of God tells her, don't be afraid, for God has heard his voice right where he is. I know exactly where he is. He's exactly where he's supposed to be. Everything's on schedule. Everything's on plan. The immediate's taken care of. Don't worry about that. From under the bush, not only do we understand that, we understand that Ishmael lifted his voice to God and was heard. He's not going to die here. The angel tells Hagar to get up, and then he reminds her of his promise. I will make him into a great nation. He told her that last time she was in the desert. In the Hebrew, though, the next thing is interesting. It says that the angel tells her to make strong thy hand upon him. When we read through that, we think, take him by the hand and bring him over to the well I'm about to show you. Not what that means. What this means is to place your hand, right? Make strong thy hand on him. He's saying, hold fast to him. You're going to find out in a second, she actually goes and fills the skin with water and brings it to him. So it's not about going and grabbing him by the hand. What he's telling her is, because not only is her worry about her son, what's going to happen to me? He says, grab hold of your son, hold fast to him as I make him into a great nation. I have a purpose and a promise for you and for him. And God then opened her eyes to see the well. She filled the skin and she brought it to her son for him to drink. And then the scene expands, it opens up, and it brings us up out of time, and God kind of shows us what takes place then over the coming years. He says, God then remained with the boy, and he grew up, and he lived in the wilderness. He became an expert with the bow, which means it speaks to a great provision and a great protection. He's a hunter, and he's a warrior. He lived in the wilderness of Paran. He's in the northeastern part of the Sinai Peninsula. It's close to Mount Sinai, just east of it. If you go up and read through Exodus, the Israelites, while they're wandering, often wandered through this area. David, when he was running from Saul, he took refuge in this area. Then we're told that Hagar goes to Egypt to get a wife for her son, which is significant. Instead of getting one from Abraham's kin, his family, no, she goes and brings him a wife from the place of sin and slavery instead of getting one from Abraham. And we leave Ishmael at this point. We're going to meet up with him again in chapter 25. He and his brother bury their father together. In chapter 21, Moses moves us on. In verse 22, so God is blessing Abraham so much so that it's becoming to become a threat to the land that he's in. This guy invited him to stay, but now his flocks are thriving. He's got all kinds of land. He's got all kinds of resources. He's got all kinds of men. And we start to understand that he's a threat because who does Abimelech come to visit him with? The leader of his army, Phicol. And so there's this threat against him that they want to make sure everything's cool. They want a treaty. And so Abimelech comes, and he still, what I love about this, he still doesn't quite trust Abraham, right? You know, we would think, this is Abraham. How can you not trust Abraham? Well, if you look at it from Abimelech's viewpoint, he's not a very trustworthy man. Last time I met with him, what did he do? He told me a lie, made all of my women barren, and could have made us all get destroyed out of his lying. And so he comes to me, he says, I want you to swear to your God that you will not deal falsely with me or my posterity or my descendants. He says, we've treated you kindly. We'll talk about that word in just a minute. We've treated you kindly. We expect that you'll do the same for us. And so he asked Abraham to swear that you're not going to deal falsely with us. And Abraham says, I will swear it. So they draw up their treaty. What they're doing is this is formal. They're going to have this covenant between them, this treaty, this pact. And to start off, Abraham, it shows us that Abraham wants to get off on the right foot with him. Abraham has an issue that has been digging into him for a while. And so in order to make this right, to show his good faith, Abraham needs to clear something up. And what do we see? It says, Abraham reproved Abimelech about a well of water that Abimelech's servants had seized. Do you remember that term, reprove? When was the last time we saw it? It was Abimelech who was reproving Abraham and so gently, so sweetly reproving Sarah. Now it's this side, and Abraham says, now it's my turn to reprove you. What is reprove? It means, one, to address the issue, to get the issue out of the dark and into the light, so that the person's heart can be convicted. Oh, I didn't know I had done that. I didn't know that was the response of it. Now we both see the issue. We need to get this fixed, right? Which leads to three, we need to clear this issue. We need to fix this transgression. We need to make this wrong right. So that, four, our standing, our relationship can be restored. Do you understand reproof? I mean, is it, the reason I'm going through it again is this is an important topic. This is an important thing for us as Christians to learn because we don't often reprove well. And so what we find here is, here's a picture of it, and I want to see what happens here. Abraham says, okay, if we're going to be allies, let's clear the air and fix this issue that we have between us. Your guys came and took a well that belongs to us. They came and they just seized it and they took it by force. Look at Abimelech's response. I don't know who did this thing. You never told me that this happened. I had no idea. This is the first I've heard of this. Beloved, I want you to see something here because I want us to learn a lesson. It's a side lesson of the chapter, but it's important for us. Who's in the wrong? Abraham. Abraham is reproving him. He's in the wrong. Why is he in the wrong? One, because he's still not trusting Abimelech. After Abimelech's wonderful reproof of them, he still doesn't trust him enough to bring the matter to him immediately. Why didn't he come and say, hey, Abimelech, this thing has happened. There's this issue between us. He didn't bring it up, just let it simmer. And the minute that they say, okay, let's have this wonderful relationship where we treat each other kindly, what is every, oh man, there's this issue I have with you. And he goes, I've never heard about this issue before. The first I'm hearing of it. How many of us this morning are carrying an issue with a spouse, a brother, a sister, a family member, a coworker, that they are not even aware of? Oh, you are. You can point out that issue in your heart. You know the issue, right? But they don't know about it. Do you know this morning I want to tell you as your pastor, you're at fault. I don't know what they did, but you are the one right now that is on the wrong side of this issue. Is it that you don't love them enough to bring this to them? Is it that you don't trust them enough to bring this to them? Is it that you don't care enough about the relationship to make sure that there's nothing between you? If I went and asked that person that you're carrying this issue with, so did you know that this person has this issue with them? Would they be shocked? There's an issue between you unresolved. And it's unresolved because of you, not them. Some might say, well, it's not that big of a deal, right? I've heard that when I talk to folks in my office and they're like, well, you know, it's just not that big of a deal. Then why are you bringing it up? Why is it when I spoke about that issue, your heart went to something right now this morning? You already, there's all of us have been convicted in some way, right? You know the issue and all of you have that issue and you're saying, oh, I let that go. Did you? It was easily retrieved from your memory bank. It was easily retrieved from your heart. So obviously, you didn't let it go, which means it's still sitting there as a thorn in this relationship, poking. There's always like a minor chord. Every time you're with that person, there's just a minor chord playing in the background. There's just a little tension underneath. And the things that they do that irritate you a little more because of that static that's always there in that relationship. First challenge you, those of this church, you better make sure you don't have any issues with people in this church. The last few weeks, I've been more concerned for this body than I have been in the last 28 years. Little issues cropping up all over, and not loving one another enough to go to that person individually, quietly, to say, you know, I think this issue has come up. I have this thing that you said, this thing that you posted, this thing that you do. And that person, give them the opportunity to go, I didn't know that this hurt you. I didn't know that you felt this way. I didn't know about this issue. Now that you've got that issue into the light, now what can you do with it? Let's make it right. Let's deal with this issue. Let's figure out how we can get past this issue so that what? We can be restored into the relationship that is right. Nothing between us. Trust restored. No more minor chord. No more static every time we meet. Clean and clear. Abraham realizes this wasn't Abimelech's fault. This was mine. I want you to see what he does. It takes us straight into the covenant. He makes the covenant with him. Sends the oxen and the sheep. They make the covenant. But then Abraham does something unexpected. He sets aside 7 female ewe lambs, right? Which is a fairly sizable expense. And you see that it's out of the ordinary because Abimelech asks him, what's this all about? What's the meaning of these 7 ewe lambs? Look at verse 30. Abraham tells him, these 7 ewe lambs are my heart witness to you. Take them from my hand so that you will know that I dug this well truly. He gives him this gift afterwards. I want you to take this because I want you to know that I'm telling you the truth. I want you to know that I really want us to have nothing between us. Abimelech probably agreed to fix the issue, right? If you think about what took place, okay, now I know, I'll fix the issue, I'll get you the well back, right? We understand what took place to make things right. And so then think about the next week when he has to go to his servants and Abimelech tells him, you know the well you just took from Abraham? You need to give it back. It's his well. What are his people going to tell him? No, it ain't. It's our well. We dug this well. Why are you giving our well to that guy? He's not one of us. He's just here visiting. Why are you giving our well back to him? This is our well. And he's going to say, I already made a covenant with him, and we're giving it back, so give it back. And as he walks away, Abimelech's heart's going to be what? Gosh, I hope Abraham was telling me the truth. Right? That's real. Abraham wants to make sure that that doesn't take place. I want you to know for certain that I am telling you the truth. We dug this well. This is the truth. For whatever comes, I want him to have everything right with us. Because if he thought walking away, well, maybe he lied, maybe he told the truth. You know what that is? It's an issue. And now all the issues that are gone, now it's an issue. Maybe a small one. I just can't trust him very much. How many of you have a friend that you just can't trust very much? Why can't you trust him very much? Well, they always talk about me behind my back. Have you told them that? Have you asked them about that? Do you know, I've watched my wife do that. People will be over, they'll start talking out of school. She stops them. She's the only person in my life I've ever seen that stops them dead in their tracks. And she goes, I don't really want to talk about that. And I'm like, oh, well, I wasn't gossiping. And she goes, oh, I'm sure you weren't. But for me, I love that person. I love you. And if you got an issue, you should go talk to them about it. I'm always proud of her when I hear that. I wish I was more like that. That's what this is. And so he didn't want to have any issues Wow, okay, kind of believing, change to trust, right? So what happens? He gives him these seven, and he says, take these seven ewe lambs because I want you to know. I want nothing between us. I'm telling you the truth. Wow, his kind of believing him, I kind of believe you, turns to trust. I trust you. There's a trust that's developed between Abraham and Abimelech, and we'll see it play out again in about five chapters. He went above and beyond to ensure that there was no outstanding issues between them in either direction. Let's see here. You know, one of the notes I put on the side, Reverend Edmonds, some of you remember Reverend Edmonds. He used to take me aside. He was one of my mentors, and he used to tell me, Rob, keep short accounts. Keep the slate clean. Be quick to get things in the light and put them away and deal with them. In a church, it's the little foxes. And I wasn't, it's the little foxes. What does that mean? And it took me a long time before I asked him. I go, what does the little foxes mean? And he talks about that they would light a fox's tail on fire and send him into the forest. They would slip in and out, and they would catch an entire field on fire. It's the little foxes. It's a little flame that has the ability to root it. It's that root of bitterness that sinks in. It's what sinks ministries. It's what breaks and divides churches. It's what breaks up friendships. It's what puts dissonance in a marriage. We always think it's the big things. No, we handle the big things pretty well together, don't we? It's the little things that build up. So he goes above and beyond. He wants everything clear. And Abraham cleared the slate between them. And it indicates that Abraham desired to have a true mutual kindness. And now before we move on, this word that's used here for this kindness is chesed. It's a Hebrew word. It's a beautiful word. And the Jewish people, the Jewish teachers, the rabbis, they defined this kindness. It's undefinable. They try, and what they do is they give you 20 different words that describe chesed. But what they do when they're teaching chesed is they go to Hosea as one of the places that they teach from. Go to Hosea. Go to Daniel, turn right. Go get yourself a wife who's a whore. Get children from this whore. And then once you get them all in your family, let her go be unfaithful. Let the kids go and be rebellious and unfaithful. That's what it's like to be me every day. That's what this is like. But then he tells him this, chapter 2, verse 14. Therefore, behold, I will allure her, and I will bring her into the wilderness, and I'll speak tenderly to her. And there I will give her her vineyards, and I'll make the valley of Achor a door of hope. And there she shall answer as in the days of her youth, as at the time when she came out of the land of Egypt. And in that day, declares the Lord, you'll call me my husband. No longer will you call me my Baal. For I will remove the names of the Baals from her mouth, and they shall be remembered by my name no more. And I will make for them a covenant on that day with the beasts of the field, the birds of the heavens, and the creeping things of the ground. And I will abolish the bow, the sword, and war from the land, and I will make you lie down in safety. And I will betroth you to me forever. I will betroth you to me in righteousness and in justice, in steadfast love, and in mercies. I will betroth you to me in faithfulness, and you shall know the Lord. And in that day I will answer, declares the Lord. I will answer the heavens, and they shall answer the earth. And the earth shall answer the grain, the wine, and the oil. And they shall answer Jezreel, and I will sow her for myself in the land. And I will have mercy on no mercy. And I will say to not my people, you are my people. And he shall say, you are my God. This is where they teach. It's a loving kindness that's extraordinary. It's a loving kindness that we're to show others as God shows it to us. And even though it's hard to define, this is what they say. It's a mixture of mercy and grace and love and compassion and understanding and loyalty and a trust that is undeserved. It's the keeping of promises. It's the action of love. Beautiful word, isn't it? That's what we are supposed to be showing. What he wants, what Abimelech keeps asking for, he goes, we have showed you chesed. And we're having a treaty because we want you to show us chesed. Swear that you won't mislead us, that this will truly be a relationship of chesed. Beloved, that's how we're to live our lives. Putting things away, making sure, going the extra mile to make sure that loving kindness that God has shown to us is shown to others. So after Abraham had given the seven ewe lambs, Abimelech and Phicol returned to the land of the Philistines. So the name sticks. They call that well from then on, the oath of the seven. The oath of the seven. That's what Beersheba means, the oath of the seven. And you know what's interesting about this? So that well was in dispute, wasn't it? I said I dug it. They said they dug it. What's it called? It's the well, it's the oath of the seven. Well, what does that mean? Well, there was a day when Abimelech and Abraham met and they made a covenant with one another. And he gave him 7 ewe lambs. It's the oath of the 7. It won't be forgotten, will it? That extra added, you know, work that he did, it's not going to be forgotten, and it's going to solidify that relationship. No one's going to question who owns that well now. You see a restoration. There's a remembrance. Abraham had given the 7 ewe lambs. Abimelech, Phicol returned to the land of the Philistines, and now we close chapter 21 with this. Abraham planted a tamarisk tree here in Beersheba, and he called upon the name of the Lord. He worshipped. He called the name. First time this name is used, first time we're introduced to this name, El Olam, the everlasting God. There's a new aspect of God's character that he recognizes now. And Abraham lived many days in this area of Palestine. End of chapter 21. Come back with me for just a moment. Abraham plants a tamarisk tree here as a marker. Anyone know what a tamarisk tree is? It's a very slow-growing evergreen tree. Its roots go really deep to find water. People don't like it right now. We have it in the deserts. We have it in Texas. We have it in New Mexico. We have it in Arizona. And people don't like it because it finds the water. It takes water. In the United States, they call it a salt cedar. You know why? Because on its needles, it has all this salt that it puts out into the needles. And the salt will collect on the top of the needles, and it makes kind of a frost. So if you ever see one of these pine trees that looks like it has a frost on it, it's a salt cedar. It's a tamarisk tree. So what's cool about these little salt crystals is at night, they collect condensation, much more than the normal pine trees do. So they get really wet during the night, so that the next day when you're hot in the desert and you sit in the shade of a tamarisk tree, it's cooler than the shade of any other tree. Very, very pleasant place to sit. And so what they would say in the Middle East, they say that you don't plant a tamarisk tree for yourself. You plant it for your grandchildren and their grandchildren. Because you're not going to get the benefit of it yourself. They will. Because it takes so long for it to grow to that place. Slow growing, long lasting, but it's cool, shade giving. And so often the way they describe it, it's such a pleasant tree. Such a pleasant place to be in the shade of a tamarisk tree. It says that you rest beneath a tamarisk tree comfortably. The Lord tells us he planted a tamarisk tree. And then once he planted that tree, what did he do? He worshiped God there. And the attribute that he gave praise for, we see in the name that he uses, El Olam, the everlasting God. What it means is the God of ancient times past, who is the God of today, and who is the God of future generations. He's the God who is outside of time, yet he's here with me today. He's my God, and it's pleasant to live under his care. Moses prayed to El Olam in his prayer that we read in the scripture reading, Psalm 90. And what did he say? Lord, you have been our dwelling place. Right? Do you see the dwelling place? In all generations, before the mountains were brought forth, or ever you had formed the earth, the world, from everlasting to everlasting, you are God. Jeremiah spoke of and for the Lord using this name of God. In Jeremiah 10:10, he says, but the Lord is the true God. He's the living God. He is the everlasting King. His wrath, the earth quakes. The nations cannot endure his indignation. And then he goes on to say, and you shall say to them, all of the gods of your making, they will all fall away. They're all going to be destroyed, yet he will remain. Isaiah references the everlasting God in Isaiah 26. What Bren read for us this morning. He says this in Isaiah, you keep him in a perfect peace, whose mind is stayed upon you because he trusts in you. Trust in the Lord forever. Why? For the Lord God is an everlasting rock. That's why. It's when you come to that place where you trust him. You trust him with your life. You trust him with your day. The cares that you have on your shoulders, you trust him with. My God has it. He has a plan. He knows tomorrow. He knows next week. He knows next year. And he's the God outside of time, and yet he's the God who's here today. He's the God of Moses. He's the God of Abraham. And you know what? He's my God too. You start to see where Abraham's heart is as he worships planting this tamarisk tree. Think about where he's at. He's been called out of his sinful life by God. God reached in and brought him out of that sinful life. And he led him to now this life of faith. this life that trusts in him. Despite some of his stumbles, despite his lies, despite his fears, despite his doubts, the Lord's been faithful every day to complete every one of his promises. And today he remains my God. He's now in the land by invitation. His beloved wife has her virtue intact. Twice she's been taken by kings, and twice the Lord has kept her. My flocks are thriving. My son of promise is growing. Peace with our neighbors, and I have a well that's full of water that's mine. God has kept every promise that he's made to me thus far. And you know what? Knowing that, I know that every promise he's made for me yet in the future will take place with the same specificity, with the same accuracy, with the same power. It's a great day for this man who trusts in his God, El Olam. This will be his dwelling place for all generations under the arms of this everlasting God. Beloved, as I close this morning and we consider the Lord today, I want you to think, don't we also have a reason to worship in the same way that Abraham did? You know, Abraham was promised that he would have a son, have offspring that would bless every family upon the earth. We know who that is, right? The one God sent to save us from our sin. Isaiah 9:6 spoke this way of the one who would come. He will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. In Psalm 100, his loving kindness is everlasting to everlasting. Deuteronomy 33, we can dwell beneath his everlasting arms. Psalm 100, his faithfulness is to all generations. Psalm 145, his kingdom is everlasting and it has no end. He has made an everlasting covenant with all those who trust in him. His righteousness is everlasting. In Micah 5:2, we're told that out of Bethlehem will come for me one whose coming forth is from of old, from the ancient of days. In Hebrews, we're told he's the same yesterday, today, and forevermore. Jesus himself lets us know that he is I am. In Revelation, he calls himself the Alpha and the Omega, the first and the last, the beginning and the end. He calls himself the one who is, who was, and who is to come. Beloved, can't we, with Abraham, stop and worship in the midst of God's goodness, in the salvation of his son, we who were called out of our sinful life into this life of faith? Can't we with Abraham look back and say, man, I've made mistakes, I've stumbled, I've gone through doubts, I've gone through valleys, I've sinned against him, yet he's still my God. I'm still his child. This God outside of time is here with me today. He's the God of Abraham, and he's my God. He graces me every morning as I seek his loving kindness. And so this morning, what I want, I always kind of give you a challenge this week. In Abraham's worship in Beersheba, he calls on the name of the Lord, and the name he used was El Olam, Everlasting God. And there's a sweetness to the way in which he does this. There's a thankfulness, there's a trust, there's a contentment. I think this is the first time in this series in Abraham there is a sweet contentment. There's a recognition. He's got no issues right now. They're all in the light. They're all dealt with. His God's been faithful. His son's been born. He's growing. God hasn't finished all the things he said he was going to do, but he can see them taking place. He recognizes he's in the hands of God. And so he's got this sweet contentment. Doesn't really matter what's going on all around him. I'm in the everlasting arms of God. And so here's your challenge this week. I want you to find a nice evergreen tree. I don't know if you'll be able to find a salt cedar if you can, even better yet. But find yourself a pine tree. And in the hot of the afternoon, sit in its shade. And in the sitting in that shade, as we think about all the stuff, we got floods, we got hurricanes, we got fires, we got division, we've got hate. There's a lot going on. But in the shade of that pine tree, find that sweet contentment, recognizing that the God who rescued Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and Joseph, that same God who was with Peter and Paul, he's with you. He's your God. He is the everlasting God. He's the same yesterday, today, and forevermore. And you dwell safely in his arms. Can you do that? I'm going to do it this week. Find a time to thank God for being El Olam, reminding ourselves that he sent his son, that we might draw close to him, and his son is coming again. Let's stand together and we'll sing.